Good morning, everybody. Our agenda today is at this URL. Quick summary of it. We are going to have our normal announcements, reminders, progress on our action items, status. The bulk of our meeting is going to be reviewing revocation and rotation. And then we will end the meeting with focal use cases, which is an ongoing topic. One of the first things we need to do is choose a scribe. We choose that from the list of prior participants of our meetings. At the top of the list, we have today Adrian. Benjamin
I
Young.
I am a totally competent scribe.
You're okay, fabulous. So thank you for being available, and I'll move you to the end of the list. The next part of our meeting is introductions. Is there anybody who this is their first your first IRC meeting with us on a Tuesday?
Hi, yes, this is my first. My name is Ganesh Anand. I am a new software engineer here at Digital Bazaar, and I'm doing a lot of engineering around these open standards.
Welcome, Ganesh. Any other first-time participants today? Okay, so the other thing we do is we always reintroduce somebody. The next on that list, let's see. Bob, are you on the call today? Bob Dolan? Bodan Andreev, are you on today?
Yes, hi, I'm here.
Could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Bohdan Andreev, and I work on ValidBook. ValidBook is a universal platform for cooperation. So I encourage everyone to provide feedback on this idea. I published this to the mailing list.
Great, thank you. So we're going to take a moment and double check our voice over IP connections. Make sure that we have everybody registered. We need a lot of people unknown. Let's see. I'm not the master of this particular thing, so let's see.
Hey, Christopher, I can do it. And then everybody that's unknown, we're just going to have to ID from IRC who joins and leaves for your IRC. So I can do that when cleaning up the minutes. There's
okay.
One area code, 510 area code, 908-1066. Who's that?
That's mine.
Okay.
That's me.
Okay. And then for anyone else that wanted a present plus themselves, that would be good.
I'm here at Sam, but I can't go on the queue because I'm driving.
Okay. Thanks, Sam.
And the syntax for present plus is just present plus or yep. present plus in your name?
Nope, that's fine. Okay. Present plus should be fine, and then I can clean it up after the call.
Okay. So next on our agenda is finding it again. Sorry, lost the URL. Okay, so next on our agenda is our announcements and reminders. The first one is that we are planning on the week of July 16th to have sort of a virtual VTCR hackathon. Basic idea is that those people who are want to be involved with VTCR, we will each morning be meeting, doing a stand-up on Monday the 16th. Basically reporting out the results of what we're working on as far as VTCR. We definitely could use some help from some of the JSON LD folks, so if you're at all available that week, we would really appreciate your help in helping us make sure that we're using the right libraries and the right JSON LD. So that's the week of July 16th. On August 29th through 31st, a number of us will be in Helsinki, Finland for the My Data conference. My Data. Which is this URL. So I believe there's at least three of us that are speaking and several other people that are attending that conference. So if you're in Europe, you'd like to meet some of the other people from the credentials community, that's a great place to do it. The next Rebooting Web of Trust, our seventh, will be the week of September 24th in Toronto. We don't have a URL yet, but want to make sure everybody, saves that date. We're still trying to get a final venue and know precisely whether or not we start on the 24th or we start on the 25th. Manu, at this point, is the corresponding other event possibility closed because we've run out of time?
Yep, it's unlikely because we were just, it's unlikely. I'll try to circle back around with them to see if there's still a possibility there. I think we still have a gap in the week, right, where they could slot
yes.
in? Okay. I'll try to send out an email right after the call today, but I really doubt it because it'll be so rushed.
Okay. There has been some discussion that the weekend after, I think that's the 29th and 30th, There's been some discussion about the weekend after possibly having a DIF or Microsoft Hackathon. We don't have confirmations of that yet. And then we wanted to make sure everybody was aware that we're really shooting to try to evangelize for a DID working group at the annual TPAC conference, which this year is in Lyon, which unfortunately is the same week as IIW. So a lot of the leadership of the community will be in Lyon trying to persuade other W3C members that, you know, they should support and participate in decentralized identifier working group. So that's the week of the 23rd in October. So those are upcoming events that, you know, people ought to be aware of. Are there any other upcoming events that I have missed or should be on the on our sort of reminder schedule? Okay, so nobody's on the queue, so we'll continue. Current action items. There, as was mentioned earlier, there's been some discussion about having a hackathon on the 29th and 30th. This was suggested by Microsoft. I'm not quite sure if BIF is also pushing that, but this might be an opportunity for Sovereign or Uport, or there is one to also be talking about doing a hackathon. So if you're interested, you know, let us know and we'll try to coordinate with other people who want to do a hackathon that week. Manu, go ahead.
Yeah, just to mention that I think we'll be there that entire week, a number of us from DigiBazaar and VerisOne. So we'd be happy to participate in the hackathon, help people build stuff. And there might be, you know, a hackathon doesn't just mean, you know, one ledger. We could work on, like, interop testing and, you know, small little command line tools for doing resolution against Marcus's resolver or standalone resolvers. So there are many options for the hackathon.
Okay.
But we'll be there.
Thank you very much. So anyhow, the idea is that after rebooting a hackathon and, you know, if you're one of the other organizations and wants to take advantage of that time, let us know, and we'll try to coordinate that. So we have a variety of other action items. We keep track of our action items now in our community GitHub is an issue. So if you take a look at that URL, you will see the current open action items. Does anybody wish to have any question about any of these action items, want to report on them or close one of these action items? We have a variety of updates, panels that are happening in different places, TPAC planning, moving stuff out of OpenCred, the old OpenCreds website to our current website, some repo moves, announcements, et cetera. Manu, go ahead.
Just a question. Is Andrew, I don't see Andrew Hughes on the call today. I was just wondering if the spec training video's out yet. I think that's, I'm done there. With the spec training stuff, and we're just waiting for the video to be released, video and audio to be released from that. Any updates on that? Or is there anything that we can help Andrew with to get that out there?
Do you have, it's Andrew Hughes, I'm gonna assign it away from you to Andrew. So let's see, Andrew. Okay. So I changed him.
And then issue 7, I think the spec text version of the registries process is done. I thought that was pulled into the specs. I forget why it's still open. And then I think Dave Lane, do you have an update on open creds?
Yeah, I forgot to update the issue. I added a note on the various pages on the open creds site just to point to the newer work. It was a very simple change. If anyone has any suggestions making that better, that's fine. It's just, I mean, we might want to move more content over one way or the other, but it was just a quick fix.
Well, sorry, which one was that one?
The issue number?
Yeah.
Number 9, I guess? The open creds update /
plan? Okay.
And then the other item is issue 18. I think so there's been progress on issue 18. Mike Jones from Microsoft wrote up the SECP 256K1 parameters for JWK and put a spec out there. The next step is for the UPort folks to specify a LD crypto suite mechanism that uses the JWK and the SECP 256K1 stuff, and then stuff like that. So there's progress being made on it. I don't know, is anyone from UPort here today? I just want to make sure that, I mean, they've gotten a couple of emails, but I'm just trying to make sure that they know that the...
Okay.
That it's on them to push that stuff forward.
Yeah, can you add comments on that? And should I assign this to Christian or?
Yep. Pele, I think, is the one that took the action to do it at the last.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the.
Pele, P-E-L-L-E. If he's not on there, then Christian's fine.
Yeah, I'm not finding Christians either. I'm not, as far as what I'm trying to do, assignees. I'll figure that out later.
Okay.
Okay, so, let's see, looking back at the queue. Marcus, go ahead.
Thank you. So, I just wanted to do a quick update on DDoS, which is not listed as an issue in the community repository. I guess it should be. I guess should be creating an issue for that. But I just wanted to give an update. So at last rebooting the Web of Trust, we started working on a paper on DDoS, which was a little bit challenging, I would say, because it's very vaguely defined term and different people and different communities associate different things with DDoS. So is it a browser-based API like the credential handler API? Is it service-to-service, agent-to-agent authentication? Is it scanning a QR code with a mobile app? And so on. So the idea of this paper was not to do a specification, right? It was to try and summarize or do a snapshot of the current state of the discussion and to document what people associate with DDoS and what forms it could take. So there's some common elements, DDoS being about proving control of a DID using some kind of mechanism. And so in the document, we sort of have an introduction section where we try to identify what's common to all the different understandings of DDoS, and then we list a lot of examples. We have a lot of examples what a DDoS challenge can look like, what a response can look like, and what an overall architecture can look like. And in the last few weeks, I've been working with Dmitry Zagdulin, who's not here today, and some of the other authors. And there are now a few more pull requests for the document. And with those pull requests, I think the document is kind of content complete. So we still want to review it a little bit and do some editorial passes and get some feedback. But basically everything that we wanted to have in that document to introduce the concept of DDoS, again, not to do a spec or anything like that, but just to document what it is about. I think we have that now in the documents. I would like to, on behalf of the
Okay.
other authors and everyone who has contributed, to ask for feedback. And I can post the links to the mailing list and should I create a GitHub issue on the community repo?
Right. So I think that some questions are. I mean, right now, where is the GitHub for this? What's the URL?
Okay, so it's in the rebooting the Web of Trust.
Okay, so it's still So basically, it's a rebooting repo at this point. One of the questions for the community is, what are next steps? Do we ask Marcus and team to, create an abstract for a spec and do it as a work item? Are we ready to tackle this as a work item? So that's kind of one of the next steps after letting people be aware of the publication of this document is, where do we go from here? Okay, Joe, you're next.
Great, that's a good segue because I think where we go from there is adopting it as a work item. So
we need an abstract of what the proposal is for the work item and then we discuss it here. Are we ready? Do we have time? Is there sufficient interest? And if it is, we say it's a work item and we add it to our work items list.
That's right. And we had suggested we'd wait for the rebooting Web of Trust process to work its way through. So.
Right.
I think we're on track for that.
Okay.
The item I want to talk about, so there's a couple pull requests. I guess this is just a reminder from Manu. These are on the DID method registry. We had some good back and forth about that, but it's not in our action items here.
Ah, thanks. Completely forgot about that.
So. Ping me if we need more conversation. But
okay. Yep. We'll look at that.
Okay. And Manna, you're next anyhow. So.
This was mostly on. Please review. Sorry, describing. This has to do with DidAuth. So Marcus, clearly we'd love to collaborate on that. We're very interested in DidAuth. I think there are a couple of layers just to think out loud. I think they're the messages that go back and forth, right? So that's one thing. I think the times that W3C and ITF have really screwed up is that they didn't layer things properly. And there's some good layering, lessons learned from the last 30 plus years at ITF and W3C. And the first one is get the messages right? Get the data modeling and the messages right. And then whatever protocol you need to build on top of that is kind of another set of specs. So DidAuth means you're absolutely right, many things to many people. But I think there's a set of messages that are pretty consistent among all of the authentication mechanisms. Yes, we may need a couple of things added to the messages depending on the protocol that are protocol-specific things, but the core of it's still pretty close. So I'd suggest that if we start going down the spec path, that the first spec that we talk about is a kind of data model messaging specification, whereas the specs that are built on top of it is how do you do DidAuth over, through the browser, how do you do it server to server, how do you do it, via QR codes, how do you do it over Bluetooth, LE, NFC, that kind of stuff. And at least, if we're going to start doing specs around this, I hope that we end up structuring it like that rather than trying to make one DidAuth specification. Not suggesting that anyone's suggesting that we do that, but that's a clear anti-pattern. So yeah, I mean that's just feedback for you, Marcus. Do with it what you will, but we're very interested in collaborating on that.
Thank you. Marcus, you're on the queue.
Yes. Yes, thank you. I think that sounds great, right? To have some modular layered approach to defining the data models and so on. But at least for me personally, I think it might be a little too early to actually start working on a spec. So I thought it would be good to have this paper now as a Rebooting Web of Trust publication, which is not a spec, which is just an overview and introduction. I think it might be too early to actually start, you know, picking the data formats and the protocols into an actual spec. I don't think I'm qualified or able to lead that right now. There's too many moving pieces, right? There's the DID spec, there's DID resolution, there is verifiable claims, and this is all related. And some people are using the RDF JSON LD verifiable claims format. Other people are using JSON web tokens. Then there's the question, how does this relate to OpenID Connect? How does it relate to FIDO web authentication? We talk about that, about all of that a little bit in the paper, but to move from there to an actual spec, I wouldn't want to do it right now. Maybe a little bit later.
I mean that's why we have the process we do around work items, when we call the document you've been working on final, we can maybe schedule a meeting just on reviewing your observations, your team's observations and thoughts about GitOp. You or other people can make proposals for work items. We can discuss them. We can discuss if we're ready, who wants to be involved, maybe merge different ideas about, you know, what we want to do, what the different missing pieces are that need to be done first. And if, you know, we've kind of got, we're ready to tackle as a work item, we can have a process to accept it. But we really appreciate the work, and we know that this is a direction we have to go in at some point. But it could be that we don't start on it until, you know, sometime in the fall. Let's see, okay, Manu, go ahead.
I think that was. Sorry. No. I also just bringing this to the group's attention. There's a specification that we worked on with Amazon and Oracle way back in 2012 called Signing HTTP Messages, or it's also called the HTTP Signature Specification. And it's been out there for like 7 years. And we use it quite a bit with our customers. And what we didn't realize is that there has been a very sharp uptick in its usage. And we are starting to use it for things that look very close to DidAuth. So this is just like another, you know, heads up to Marcus that, you know, at the last Rebooting Web of Trust, we were unaware how much it was being used, but more recently it's being used quite a bit. The other thing it's been really interesting is that we are using it for OCAPI type things. So we may be... We're experimenting with kind of server-to-server agent-to-agent authentication and OCAP and HTTP, so HTTP signatures. So that doesn't mean that we're going to reuse HTTP signatures for it, but there's like this family of kind of server-to-server communication that has a pretty stable base on the HTTP signature stuff that we may then layer on top. Clearly, like one way to do HTTP signatures is to, for the key ID, point to a DID document instead of some kind of X509 cert. So that's just another thing that it was, you know, really quiet on that front for a while. And like in the past like 2 or 3 months, we've seen an incredibly sharp uptick in its usage, primarily because the PSD2 initiative in Europe, all of the banks are starting to use it to do authentication for access to account information in Europe. So they did that without even like contacting us to say that they were going to do it, and now it's potentially being rolled out to millions upon millions of customers in Europe. So anyway, another piece of work to take into account and piggyback off of to get kind of did support in there, did auth support in there.
Okay. So we need to time box the discussion a little bit. So I'm closing the queue on this topic after Marcus. Marcus, you're the last.
Okay, just very quickly, yeah, HTTP signatures, that's also covered in the paper as one of the examples. I use this also for the BCGov project. I wrote some code with big resolution in HTTP signatures, and I know the TrustNet research project in Finland, I think they are also considering to use HTTP signatures.
Okay, so as we discussed in action item things, we're trying to be more careful about the use of work items. So this is the list that we have at this point of the official work items, which are quite substantial. So do we have anybody that wishes to report out on any of these official work items to tell us about progress or anything? And then, Joe, there was this cryptic entry in the agenda that there was something that Manu was going to report on that he wasn't around when we asked him, and I don't know what it is. Something about a DID spin-up.
Yeah, that was because on one of our chair calls a couple weeks ago, Manu had a nice concise rundown of the things to be done to get the DID working group up and running.
And that's DID working group.
A good list to chair.
So maybe we should move that to out of work items and back to our action items. We need a checklist, Manu, of what are the things we have to have to be able to do the, to request a formal W3C working group for DIDs. So maybe just a checklist as an action item in the action items would solve that.
Sure. Although we've got Daniel on the queue. He's been on the queue for a while.
Daniel,
go ahead.
I guess I just wanted to, and I know this is the DID auth thing a little bit, but over in DIF, we've been talking to Group 6 Sovereign and others who have very elaborate schemes for authentication and message transfer, and I'm kind of waiting personally and as an organization to figure out what that final scheme that they see is going to be. In the DID auth schemes that are being kicked around here, like things like HTTP signatures are far less elaborate, and I'm just curious, is there thinking when you say like standardize the message scheme? That's actually been kind of, I wouldn't say a bonus attention, like a negative anti-organization way, but there's some organizations that want very very elaborate messaging flows, and then when I hear something like HTTP signatures, which is not as elaborate, which could be good or bad, right? I'm just curious what direction that's trending within this group.
Yeah, so we need to, I'm trying to time box so we can get through our agenda when,
sure.
when we're behind.
Yeah.
DID auth is a major topic. We do have to talk a lot about the scoping of it, which is why it's not officially a work item. So, we will bring it up, and that what you're talking about is a very legitimate question. Joe, do you have something on the current work items?
Yes, I just wanted to let folks know that the Amira Texas vinyl, it's gone out to the authors and contributors for sign-off. So hopefully we'll be ushering that in as a work item proper in not too long.
Okay,
cool. Thank you.
Okay, so let's move to the meat of our agenda, which begins with, we made a call out in one of the previous meetings, which we still want to have, which is, what are the requirements for DIDs? What are the minimal the minimal features? Among that, we then had a discussion on the email list regarding, should revocation and rotation be required for DID methods? And there's been some active discussion on that. But I wanted to, quickly recap what do we mean? So what are the different choices and possibilities? So, in the agenda, I have this list. I just wanted to quickly walk through and see if we're missing anything. And then we will have another meeting in the future to make some decisions about requirements for methods. So, but this is not about, is this to be required? I'd rather not have that as a discussion, but more of what are the possibilities and, what are the different things here. So in under mechanisms, we have obviously no revocation possible. You can have items that only expire. There are a lot of single-time keys and things of that nature that fall into that category. Keys that can revoke themselves, aka PGP style. The problem with that is that if you've lost the key, there's no way to revoke it. Other keys can have revocation power, which is what a lot of DIDs currently do. In the case of DTCR, it's a completely separate key that revokes the key that is published. There are a variety of multi-signature and/or social revocation revocation possibilities. And then, I presume that some of the blockchains like Sovereign, maybe Verus One, I'm not sure, that the organizational, institutional blockchain itself has a revocation process that is independent of the key holder side of things. Not sure. Are there any other mechanisms that people can think of that we're missing?
Specific to recovery?
Specific to the first part, which is mechanisms for of kinds of revocation.
And you're talking about revocation of keys, not like verifiable credentials or anything like that?
We're talking DIDs at this point, so right. DID and DID methods.
Well, what we're kind of working on, just so folks understand, we're working on a layer two for DIDs, period, which is blockchain agnostic. You basically can write an adapter and do large scale DID creation on anything that supports data in a transaction. It'll be open source. We'll throw it out there. If the community wants to use it, fantastic, whatever. Just kind of our put to get to some scale ideas. And it's not going to be like Microsoft. We're not trying to run it as like a Microsoft thing. But there is an element of recovery in it. And one method that we are playing around with, and this is not under patent, the base construction, is encapsulating like a hash completion value. So take a value, put the hash out there in this sort of layer two thing that can create the DID document. And if someone publishes, the answer to that hash, that would serve as proof that, they're attempting a recovery, which would override potentially the, maybe keys that the attacker had inserted, however that works. And based on this fuzzy encryption method that MSR has reviewed. So that's one way, is more or less like publishing a hash completion. I don't know if that's already common in the ways you're talking about, but we're trying to use this construction to make some more human-friendly mechanisms of
recovery. Does that fall under? Does that mechanism follow under one of these mechanisms that we listed? That I listed. Who has the authority to make that hash, publish that hash, and what information is required, to be able to publish that hash?
So the hash is set by the user. So like on initial DID create, you basically create your first DID document state, like a delta, right, kind of like JSON patch in ITF, and you'd say, here's my initial state, and maybe that includes some keys and endpoints or whatever. And
right.
Then you put
so
inside this top, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, but basically it's a key revoking itself. It's the key is created on DID instantiation, and then the use of the key can revoke itself.
It's not actually a key. It's by inference. So think about like I take a hash like 007 and I hash it, right, or something like that, right? I obviously want something bigger, but or some random big hash. I put the hash of the value that is the secret out inside this like layer 2 DID substrate that is paired with the DID document deltas, and it's sitting there. So at some future time, something goes awry, person gets a hold of a private key that was in my DID document that has some authority and does some bad stuff. And I'm like, I want to wipe the slate clean. I want to basically say that all those keys are invalid, or maybe at least some of them or whatever, right?
The question, though, is, I apologize for interrupting. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to understand. Sure. You, in order to do that action, it still requires you to have access to the original key to publish.
No.
So what is
it that
authorizes that revocation to happen?
So think about a secret value that only through a recovery process that isn't actually key-based. I would say it's not public-private
key-based. Okay, but it's generated by the key. Is that correct?
No. It's like think about your bundle of keys that are authoritative over the DID as declared on create, and then you're adding a secret value that's hashed as like another piece, and that's like your canary in the coal mine, as it were, right?
Okay.
And
but
so all you have to do is post
it. Still another. It may not be a cryptographic key. It's a random key, but it's a secret.
It's a random. It's a random secret completion value of a random.
So I think I'll add to this list of mechanisms that a secret revokes. Just to be clear that it's not a cryptographic. Do we have any of the sovereign folks here? Can sovereign do an institutional revocation when a party has totally lost their keys? And Veris One
can. Yes. We institutional being like it's an entity, and an entity can be many different things. You can do M of N for social recovery. You can do an institution such as a local state government. You can do a for-profit institution that you're paying for key recovery. But fundamentally, it all just boils down to it is some key that has the ability to rotate your keys out.
I'm just trying to be clear in the different styles. Some of those sound like the multi-signature things. But let's just say I arbitrarily register a Veris One ID. I use my own keys to register it. I totally lost my keys. I did not set up any multi-signature or any kind of recovery method. Does the Veris One blockchain have the ability to, through the foundation or whatever?
Anyway, we have some thoughts on that. We think it's kind of that's a bit dangerous.
But I wanted to mark it down.
Sure. Yep. No. We do not support that right now, at least for Veris One, and I'd be surprised if we ever do.
Okay. So continuing, you know, on the discussion, we also talked about kinds of revocation. So I know with BTCR, we can revoke without any reason at all. We can just basically, it'll go bang, it's revoked. We can revoke with a reason, which can be things like, you know, we can mark that it's because of, you know, of compromise, you know, just regular, you know, we're just not going to use it anymore, but there's no known compromise, et cetera. We can revoke and then present a new key, which is basically how rotation works. We also have rotation question, revocation of the of a single key in a DID versus the root key of the DID. So what we are calling the root key versus transactional keys. So you know, we're kind of curious about how people are doing that in some of the different frames. Can we remove a key from a transactional list of keys without explicit revocation? So, you know, you have a key in a DID that's, you know, a transactional key as opposed to a root key for the whole DID, and then we update the DID document. Is it acceptable to remove the key, just saying, you know, just no longer list that key? And then there were some discussions at some point, and I've forgotten the details on them, about different kinds of revocation holds, things where like, hey, you know, don't rely on this key right now, await further information, maybe it'll be okay. I'm not sure what those ideas were. Are there any other kinds of revocation, not so much the mechanism of stating the revocation, but is there any you know, details about the kinds of revocation that we've kind of missed?
I have one. That's why I'm on the queue. So my question is this.
Go ahead.
This is a real problem that we see in the industry. A manufacturer, perhaps, of device drivers, somebody in the company gets bribed to sign some malware. The you can't revoke the key because all the device drivers that are already out there would suddenly stop working, stuff that's shipped. But what you would like to know is that this thing has been signed and shouldn't have been, and this particular signature is invalid. That is, it would be nice if you could do a whitelist rather than a blacklist. Blacklist is I revoke everything that was signed by this key. A whitelist is here are the things that were signed by this key that are valid.
Okay, so blacklist versus whitelist might be the way. What?
But it would be of signatures rather than keys somehow.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, so I'll add that to the types. Any other types?
Yeah, I mean, so the way that we're kind of approaching it is, you know, maybe there isn't a true root key, like a single key, because in our construction, you don't actually, like you bulk load a transaction with potentially hundreds of thousands of DID ops, which maybe creates or updates or whatever. Thus, when you instantiate your DID, you could declare potentially multiple keys that have the power to add other keys or remove keys. But those can be overridden through that revocation thing I was talking about, where it's not really a key, but it's the single authoritative thing. So does that make sense in the sense that you can like come to life with keys that have all equidistant power and the ability to like add, remove each other or others?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm capturing that as a
like their power relationship is equal in the sense that like you can say, hey, I'm creating a new ID, right, and I have these three keys that I want to be seen as a keys at a top level of authoritative like power that can add other keys or remove keys or themselves. And if one of those is compromised, there is a way to remove even those or all of the ones via that revocation sort of clear the table thing we're talking about, you know?
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so that's sort of separate keys, and it's sort of in the metadata category of multi-signature or whatever. Other keys can revoke. Okay, so
can I ask a question? Go ahead. Can I ask a clarifying question on the keys? So
sure. Who's speaking?
I want to make sure I understand what I heard you describe, Chris, is a lot of cases where we are revoking individual keys, but the DID spec talks about revoking DIDs, and I just want to make sure that I understand when we're talking about revocation, are we talking DIDs, or are we talking keys, or are we talking both?
Yeah, part of the reason why I'm trying to articulate this, and I will later in the discussion with the rotation, there's updating key, the DID document key, which is used to maybe to sign DID documents, but then there are DIDs that don't have signatures on them. They're validated by the blockchain, not necessarily by a signature of the DID document. And then there are the keys that are in the bag of keys that are inside the DID documents. So is it the job of a DID method to define how and where these approaches are? So that's kind of what I'm trying to to puzzle through here architecture wise. So when we have the discussion about this further, of what should be in a method spec, does the method spec say, hey, you have to use some entirely other method for these OCAP keys or verifiable claim keys that we have inside our DID document that are not signing the DID document as a whole? Do we have to define those revocations? Do we have to deal with that at the method level? Or is it that we only have how you revoke the DID as a whole or rotate the DID as a whole? And I'm unclear on that, that we have a firm idea that what that is.
Got it. Chris? One other comment I wanted to make regarding, I think it was DCC's revoking one particular key.
Scribe interrupt. Is this you, Chris? Is this Chris speaking?
This is Chris,
speaking.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, sorry. I just wanted to throw out, is that potentially better solved with revoking using a credential and revoking the credential as opposed to revoking the entire key?
Yeah, I that's another question where we fit into my presumption is revoking, the DID spec and the method specs aren't going to talk about verifiable claims and revoking keys that were used in verifiable claims, but maybe I'm wrong. David asked, what does rotate a DID mean? That means that the keys used to update it are changed, like fundamentally changed. In the VATCR case, you're basically revealing the you're revoking the old key and establishing a new key, which is what has to sign the DID document or authenticate an IPFS record. So that's the answer to that question. And then Q. Manu.
So just to bring a little bit of clarity, at least we have clarity about how we think about this. So in IRC, it became pretty apparent that some people thought we were talking about revoking DIDs and other people thought we were talking about revoking keys. And then there's a higher level question around how does one relate to the other, right? So just to be clear about at least what I'm talking about, I thought we were talking purely about key rotation modification in a DID document, specifically not anything
right.
about revoking the DIDs or saying that a DID is no longer useful or any of that stuff. So at least, you know, our clarity comes from there are two layers here, right? There's the lower layer, which is purely about how do you say a key has been revoked or you shouldn't trust it temporarily or it's been rotated or that kind of stuff. And all of those annotations go in the DID document itself with the key that you're talking about. So for example, in the bag of keys or, you know, any kind of key reference anywhere, you can say this key has been revoked as of this time and date. You can also provide a status reason for the revocation. We are thinking that we're probably going to borrow quite a bit from the vocabulary used to revoke credentials. So revocation, you know, status, reason, or at least the key status, you know, if it's been modified, a reason behind that, the date that the key was, you know, rotated, things of that nature. But all of those annotations go on the key itself in the DID document itself. At least that's the way the Verus One ledger's approaching it. There is
okay.
a possibility to refer to keys outside of the DID document, and I think that's another discussion that we haven't had. It creates a lot of complexity, and there's no clear, really compelling use case to do that. So all that to say that, you know, I think we would in the future, it would be very good to say we are specifically talking about key rotation in DID documents, and that could be something that the DID document actually talks about, because you need to know that in order to process a DID document properly. Like, for example, is this key in here appropriate for authentication or has it been revoked? That's like a fundamental question that you ask when you get a DID document. So I'd say that, you know, that kind of stuff could go in the DID document unless we want to move that kind of stuff off into like DID auth or something else. So I can see arguments for putting it in either place.
Yeah. So anyhow, part of the reason why I wanted to have this discussion was exactly this, you know, raising some of these higher level questions. So, you know, where we're sort of saying we have this question about, you know, revoking DID as a whole versus revoking keys that are in a DID document. And is the idea of rotation, we all have sort of different approaches in thinking of this. And then ultimately, at least in my perception, one of the fundamental differences between, sort of classical identifier, cryptographic identifiers and DIDs is their ability to be revoked and rotated in it. So, at some point we're going to have to make some decisions about, you know, are methods that don't do these things truly DIDs or, are they something else? So, which will be yet another
Chris,
agenda item.
We're at the top of the hour and we've got two folks on queue.
Okay.
Joe,
go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just hit mine real quick. I think, Manu, that part of the question that came out in our conversations about this is, what about when you can't trust the DID because the key that signed it is itself compromised? And hence, what are the options? And some of these we've been talking about, like, equipotent other keys, as Daniel brought up, et cetera. So I think that opens up a little bit broader framework than just how you deal with rotation within a trusted DID document.
Daniel, go ahead.
Super quick question. Is it like frowned upon or allowed that we can annotate keys inside a DID document for method specific purposes? Like if I wanted to have a bag of keys like five long, but two of them were like quote unquote, you know, more important than the others or have some purpose that's specific to the DID method, is that allowed for or good or bad or what's
Manu, go ahead.
Just the suggestion is that that's totally fine, Daniel. I think the issue, of course, is that it creates an interoperability problem. Like, if only one ledger supports those types of annotations, no general tooling will be able to understand. There won't be any interoperability. But all that said, like, that's how innovation happens, and we're trying to make it so that all these different ledgers can innovate at their own speed. And we expect there to be properties in DID documents that are very DID method specific, over time. So that's how we're supporting the whole, like, decentralized innovation thing, is like, you can put anything that any DID method can put anything that they want to in the DID document. They just have to make sure that they follow the DID spec for things that they want interoperability around.
Okay. Cool. Thanks.
Well, thank you everybody for the discussion. We should continue this on the list. Next week, I think, Joe, is it correct we should just dive into the focal use cases for the whole week? Is that correct?
We could do that. I think we've got a lot to work
on. Do we have anything else pressing to as a topic for next week?
Not off the top of my head.
So next week, Adrian, we're sorry that we didn't get to your item today, but you'll be first next week. Thank you, everybody, and thank you for a good discussion.